Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez. And Brian, we're back together.
We are back together.
Now, have you been?
Oh, gosh. I've been in South Africa. I've been in Slovenia, Croatia. I've been all over the map.
Awesome.
So I'm back home for a little while.
Search for the real killers.
Back here until Tech Ed North America.
Awesome.
Back to New Orleans. You going?
I am.
Oh, excellent.
And hopefully many of you will, and we can all catch up.
Yeah, put the New Orleans Police Department on notice. Top story is Web Matrix 3. So Web Matrix, a lot of people probably know this is a free, lightweight tool for building ASP.NET applications and other types of applications as well, like PHP and Node.js.
Yeah, and using pre-built apps like WordPress.
Yeah, and so this new release has a ton of features. No-brainer upgrade, makes it really easy for you to get started with ASP.NET websites that might be hosted on Azure or any number of other third-party hosters.
Cool, very cool.
Next up,
Windows Azure SDK 2.0. So this is the second version of the Windows Azure SDK for .NET developers. And this is Scott Gu's blog where he really goes down. If you haven't seen, you know, we talked about some of the live event that we've done. Mm-hmm. This breaks down, does the screenshot tour, if you will, of all the new features in the tool. And this includes, for example, like the ability to right-click, publish, import your publishing profile, and be able to publish and deploy.
Okay.
Be able to do things, for example, like a lot of us grew up on IIS, where you can actually have a Windows Azure website, right-click, see the current settings, and actually, for example, like stop and republish a site. So like directly there, things you would typically, for example, see on a Windows IIS manager.
You're doing this right from within Server Explorer?
Right within Visual Studio.
Nice.
Right within Visual Studio. Mm-hmm. Another really cool feature is to actually be able to listen to the logs. So you can set up the output window to actually view data directly from your Azure website log. So,
oh.
Like, let's say this is, of course, your trace information.
Yeah.
So you set up, and he goes through the steps of setting up, like, hey, I only want to see trace errors,
mm-hmm.
right? And then as your website gets hit, you'd actually see a real-time diagnostic log.
That's neat.
Number of things around diagnostics, number of things around, you know, Service Bus now supporting polling, and there's a bunch of other videos, obviously, on Service Bus and detail that have come out as well. And some of the cloud services as well that we'll talk about kind of in the next thing. But just a huge improvement to the tools directly inside Visual Studio for .NET developers.
Okay. And so our next story is very closely related to that. And it has to do with kind of more of the platform thing. So we just talked about the tools, and then this is more of the platforms, right?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the big things is improvements to virtual networks, making it really easy to set up the ability to VPN into your site. So point-to-site connectivity, where Scott Gu literally sets up a VPN, and instead of setting up a remote desktop endpoint, he can actually VPN into his machine and do a number of things. And so certainly a lot of interest there. Support for remote management of your virtual machines. Other
remote PowerShell specifically, right? That's awesome.
Yeah. So and of course, a Ruby SDK. So that includes things, for example, like you're hitting table storage and so on.
Mm.
So for people that are looking to use Ruby in Azure, it's another classic thing to do. So lots of cool improvements, whether it's virtual machines, virtual networks, and of course the Ruby SDK.
The Ruby SDK seems like a real gem.
Cool. And last thing there, Ruby Gems, okay.
Yes.
Well, we're talking Nougat, which is very similar to Ruby Gems, too, but I don't want to ruin the surprise. So next thing is, what you're seeing here is the list of what's kind of new for the Windows Azure Training Kit. So there's a number of content not listed here that has always shipped, and that's, for example, like you start using blob services, you start using CDN, and so on, that have existed before. And this is really what's new. So, of course, Azure Mobile Services in Android, updates to Azure Mobile Services in Windows Phone, HD Insight, which is how you run Hadoop inside of Windows Azure.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if people want to see the presentation or the lab and so on. And then other things, for example, like the Azure VM, Windows Azure Mobile Services, just kind of updates in terms of those presentations.
So new content for training and hands-on labs. The one thing you didn't mention, the Azure Mobile Services for Android, which actually...
I did say that.
Android, oh, I don't remember you saying that, but we'll go back and roll the tape
Yes.
Later on.
Awkward.
So anyway, So Forth and Mayer, a lot of people know Forth and Mayer is probably the most popular Foursquare application for Windows Phone, and it's built by Jeff Wilcox, who's a Microsoft employee over on the Azure team. Mm-hmm. And when he first shipped Forth and Mayer, he used Amazon Web Services, but now recently he took the time to move that over to Azure, and it's a really nice case study. He took the time to write up the experience he went through in terms of moving over to Azure, and so anybody that's thinking about moving from Amazon to Azure or just launching new services that might be backends for mobile applications might be interested in this article.
So he kind of does this whole step by step, so he sees kind of what the difference is. Mm-hmm. Do you see any highlights, lowlights, anything?
No. I mean, it's.
He kept it polite.
Yes. Yes. No, I don't think he. I don't think it's anything that's kind of, you know, high level or low level. It's or highlights or lowlights. It's just this is what you need to do to move over.
Okay, so, cool.
Visual Studio tools for applications. This is something that we haven't talked about for a long time. I actually was not aware that there's even anybody doing active development on VSTA. But for people that do need Visual Studio tools for applications, brand new version out today. This version.
And what is VSTA for people who don't know?
Yeah, so VSTA basically allows you to embed a coding experience directly within your rich client application. So if you think back to like Excel, where you used to be able to, you know, drop into code and write macros, that's the type of experience that a lot of people might want to build into their own custom application. So if you build like a CRM package or an accounting package, and you want to make it easy for people to then extend that or customize it from right within the tool, you can actually
access
you can embed Visual Studio tools for applications, and it's free to do that, actually, to redistribute.
They did remove the licensing
components.
Fee.
Exactly. So so really kind of a powerful experience for allowing people to, you know, do that last mile integration of your application.
And it's probably one of the things that people don't even know that is exists.
Possible. Yeah. So, exactly. Yep.
Very cool.
So that's cool.
Enterprise Library 6. So Soma, and there's a number of other blog posts that go through this, but you should really just go to the Enterprise Library CodePlex page to get started. There's a number of enhancements between Enterprise Library, and there are changes between 5 and 6, so they actually have a migration guide that talks through some of the details here. I really like the way the teams built out their documentation. For example, like, it's, hey, you're a .NET developer, kind of know what's going on. Mm-hmm. Here's kind of what you want to do so you can get started using some of these application blocks. And these are reusable blocks that people use for application just to, for example, data access, logging, validation, and so on. Another one is, how do I get started with this block? So there's quick starts, which is more like, what are the common scenarios for just data access, right? How do I get this data? How do I do a select statement? How do I do an update? How do I do this? And so on.
One of my favorites is the semantic logging. So, you know, we have a lot of logs out there that, you know, tell you what's going on in your application, but they require a lot of work to actually dig through and make sense out of. So semantic logging is trying to add some sanity to that, to say, okay, let's actually help you produce meaningful logs that you can look at and digest and you know, kind of regular human beings can understand.
Yeah, so, and they do have a migration guide as well for the people looking to do 5.0 and 6.0. And you can, of course, still use 5.0. And they talk about also Windows Store support as well.
That's cool.
So there's just a number of things for Enterprise Library and for the things I think a developer should definitely going to want to check this out.
Yep. So NuGet 2.5 was released this week, and you know, as always, there's a laundry list of, you know, kind of fit and finish features in here. Some you may or may not care about, but
is available for 2010 and 2012.
But in true Spinal Tap fashion, if you actually go down to number 11, that I believe is probably the most significant in our opinion, and that is, if you want to go to the next slide.
Yes, the next one is NuGet for C++. So you know, one of the challenges is, you know, for C++ is, how do you make, if I'm building these applications, it's just so easy for people to walk in, if you're, you know, say a VBC Sharp developer, to walk in and be like, wow, I really want to add logging. Mm-hmm. I really want to add, you know, this chart library.
Any sort of open source library you might need to go get. Yeah.
Yeah, you literally start searching through NuGet. Mm-hmm. And it handles all the dependencies, all the updates, all the stuff. Mm-hmm. For C++ developers, like, they had to handle all this stuff as well. So it's really all the benefits and love that you love in NuGet are now available for C++ projects.
Right.
So lots of cool stuff you should definitely read out. There are some C++ NuGet packages that are already there, and I think over time you're going to see this blow up as well. So for people just building native applications, and because there's so many C++ libraries on whether it's SourceForge or anywhere else, Git, you name it, that I think could be reusable and NuGetifying them, if you will.
Exactly.
Benefits everyone.
So speaking of NuGet, this is a great relevant article by Alex. I'm not going to attempt your last name, Alex, but it's basically the considerations you have to think about when you're dealing with NuGet in the enterprise. You know, NuGet is a really powerful, easy to use thing, but you know, like Spider-Man says, with great power comes great responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so Alex goes through and talks about some of the ramifications of using NuGet and some of the things that might be happening in the background automagically that you know, under normal circumstances are a benefit, but can oftentimes lead to unintended consequences. One example is when you specify the version of a reference that you might need as part of your NuGet package. NuGet typically interprets that to mean at least this version. And so if it goes and fetches a newer version in the background for you that you haven't tested against, obviously that could have unintended consequences. And so Alex does a really good job of providing not only the history of NuGet, kind of how it was originally thought up and conceived. And I didn't know this, it actually originally was called NuPack. So I don't know the history there, but he then talks about some of the unintended side effects that you might deal with as you're starting to use NuGet as part of your production deployments in the enterprise or really in any size organization, I think. And he talks about some different strategies to handle that. So really great write-up, one of the best I've seen in this topic.
Cool. Which brings us to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week. So my pick of the week, this is a really cool thing that honestly it seems like kind of black magic, but it seems to be legit. And some researchers over at the University of Washington, I think, they came up with a way to add touchscreen capability to, kind of an old school LCD monitor using just a $5.
Totally unmodified LCD.
Exactly. Using a $5 wall mounted sensor. And, I didn't do too well in my electrical engineering classes, so I'm going to be hard pressed to explain this to you. But basically, the idea is that that when you interact with an LCD monitor, even just by moving your hand close to it, it actually creates some different interference patterns that you can pick up on, and they can then use that to say, "Oh, it looks like you just touched the monitor, or came close to touching the monitor, or put a finger versus a hand on the monitor." Obviously, it's not the full fidelity of kind of multi-touch experience that you get on a real touch device, but it's a nice little like poor man's device that you could maybe use for some nice experiences.
Yeah, and I know this is kind of just starting as the very first wall-mounted sensor. Like, this technology could certainly advance, and I mean, touchscreens are going crazy, and everybody's now even talking about non-touch, you know, new interfaces, whether it's Kinect or Leap Motion and so on. So a lot of cool stuff.
And apparently, the same principles actually apply when you walk into a room that has compact fluorescent light bulbs. Like, your body just being in the room actually has an effect on the signal of the electricity flowing through those devices. So you could imagine, that becoming the way that you could do, like, just simple, is there a person in this room? And if not, let's turn off the lights.
Oh, good. So. Big brother. Wonderful. So this is an awesome story from our good friend down under, Nick Hodge, sent this. But it's the Game Dev Tycoon. So this is a game called Game Dev Tycoon, where it's a simulator where, you start off in the before the explosion of PCs, and you are building your own company and building games. So, and it is available in the Windows Store, so you can actually, like, again, sort of simulate, do different things to see how successful your game is. Yeah, exactly. It's a game to build games and simulate. People are familiar with those kind of simulators.
Yeah.
So probably one of the interesting things is, in this small indie shop, they decided to release the game, basically the pirated version, but change some of the logic in the game so that when they hit a certain level, your game gets so pirated that you can't get a certain income rate, right? So they're like, and the funny thing is that happens is you know, people started playing the cracked version of the game, and you start seeing all these posts. People saying, well, I keep having problems. People keep stealing my game. Is there a DRM add-on or something that I can add to my app? And just the irony of you stole a game, and now you're angry that you can't get a higher score because the game is telling you that, that customers are stealing your game.
Yeah, this is a really, really interesting social experiment. And he's clear that the game doesn't, you know, do anything on your system. There's no malware or anything like that. Although I do wonder sometimes why people that produce commercial software don't release a version of the cracked version that does actually some harmful things to your computer. I mean, really. But
isn't that considered then a virus? But I guess.
Yeah. So anyway, this is a great social experiment, and
93% of people were pirating the game.
Yeah,
and that's where I said, like, listen, if you want small indie shops and you don't want you know, terrible DRM, support our game. Like,
yeah, definitely.
Pay for it.
I'm gonna go check it out.
I have purchased the game.
Oh, congratulations!
Yes, Pray America.
So that's awesome. And on that note, actually, really good movie recommendation, a movie called Indie. It's a documentary about a half dozen different indie game developers. It's on Netflix, so check it out.
Cool.
And we will see you next week.
Thanks.
Right.